薄いのアホ。
プリズムタワーメイクアップカードレ
ディー。 Welcome to Shoujo and Tell, where we discuss shoujo manga and tell who's hot and who's not, talk about themes, and just generally geek out. Today, December 17th, 2017, we'll be covering our first Josei series, Tokyo Tarareba Girls, by Akiko Higashimura. I'm your host, Ashley McDonald, and I'm joined by Amelia Cook.
Hello.
All right, so Amelia Cook, would you like to explain a little about yourself?
My name's Amelia. I'm the editor-in-chief of Anime Feminist, and I am a big fan of Josei manga, so I'm really pleased that we're going to be covering Josei today. I don't read a whole lot of shoujo, so
I feel like I'm slowly becoming a person who is like, yeah, I want older stories. Like, I'm finally transitioning to being an adult, and like, oh no.
Oh my goodness, are you the mommy in our conversation? Am I the wrinkle? Is that where this is gonna go today?
I don't think the age difference is not that big. I'm 28 and so you're
34.
Yeah, see, it's not that big.
So you might see why I picked a manga about an older person to look at today. I think the last shoujo I was highly into was probably Fruits Basket. But the older I get, the more I want to look away from the high school stuff. I love the high school stuff, but yeah. I also, there's just something about a series starring a woman in a workplace dealing with things that I have dealt with that it just grabs my heart. And as soon as I started reading Tokyo Tarareba Girls, from the very first panel, it's like, and then I turned 33, and I was 33 at the time, and I was like, oh, this series is for me.
It's just for you.
It's just for me. But I mean, other things that I love, Nodame Cantabile. That is one of my all-time favorites. I absolutely love that. And things like Kimi wa Petto, I think, I can't remember how it was, because I first encountered it through the TV drama, not the manga. Mm. Tramps Like Us, is that right?
I don't know.
I think that was the localized name. So just like romance between adults who are like have professional ambitions, like that really grabs me.
That makes sense. I was really grabbed by this, even though I'm slightly younger than most of the characters, but I was like, this is relatable.
Exactly. And I think that's been the common theme that I've noticed when I've mentioned Tokyo Tarareba Girls to people. If they've read it, they're like, yes, it is my life. If they haven't read it, I just say, well, it's by the author of Princess Jellyfish. And they go, I have to read it.
Yeah, that's
Princess
right.
Jellyfish is beloved, and rightly so.
Yeah, so that's a good transition to, so Tokyo Tarareba Girls is published by Kodansha in North America. And right now, as far as I understand it, it's only digital, but they're gonna release it in paperback. Kodansha's weird, I don't know. And yes, it's by the author of Princess Jellyfish, which is also being published by Kodansha right now. I didn't realize that it like wasn't all out in English yet, officially, in North America anyway. I was like, what?
No, I think that's right. Yeah, I'm up to date and like waiting to see where it goes.
That's so strange. But yeah, so that's how this goes. Yeah, so do you want to give a solid plot synopsis of this manga?
I'm giving the synopsis. I'm terrible at synopses.
I mean, I can do it, but I normally make the guess.
Oh no, I'm really bad at this, but I'll give it a go. Okay. So Rinko Kamada, I think her name is. She is a 33-year-old screenwriter for web series. And she's just starting to realize that she has reached a point in her life where she has no romantic prospects, where her career is fine, but she's not kind of in the heights of it as she hoped she would be by this age. And she's just kind of existing as an adult woman does. And then she finds out that the Tokyo Olympics have been announced for 2020, and she thinks ahead, and she thinks, by that time, I'm going to be 40. I cannot be 40 and I'm married. I have to do something about this. And she spends all her time on girls' nights out with her friends, Kaori and Koyuki, who are also in their 30s. They also have jobs, but are not kind of in the heights of their career or anything like that. And neither of them has romantic partners at the time. And it's about their kind of mishaps as they realize how many opportunities they've missed out on and see opportunities in front of them and kind of try to figure out what they should compromise on, how they should settle, when they should not settle. And it's, I'm very, very bad at this, so I'm not sure I'm doing it justice, but it is the one manga I've read all year where it just absolutely was relatable in my life, and there's very little that I see in anime, and there's very little I read in manga that really, really feels true to life when you're in your 30s. So yeah, I would recommend this for anyone who's kind of in their 30s, approaching their 30s, kind of hitting that point in life where you're facing turning points and forks in the road, and kind of looking back on things and realizing you won't get those opportunities again. Those are some of the kind of situations that these characters are put into, and it really, really resonated with me.
Yeah. I would say, as somebody who is approaching their 30s, I would agree with that. I read it and I was like, oh my god, why does this hurt so much? Why is it so real? I also really want to make Jeff read it. I feel like it would be very helpful for, like, men to read about middle-aged women's experience. Like,
yeah, as middle-aged. Oh, my
okay.
word.
Young like... women's experience. I don't know. Like, there's no good term for, like, the 20 to 40.
You know, in the manga panels, when a young woman says something and out of the speech bubble comes an arrow and it stabs the character in the heart.
Like, yeah, that's
what you just did. Middle-aged.
We don't
women.
Have like a good term for like 25 to 40, I feel. You know, like it's just like woman.
Yeah, no, and it absolutely is. Yeah, it's one I would recommend to men as well. I think that. I know one guy who's read it, and he's in his early 30s as well. And he said that he felt that it resonated too, because these issues that these women face of feeling like you've lost out on certain opportunities that you didn't recognize at the time as good opportunities, and then facing kind of decisions that could you take you down very different paths in life. Like that's not a situation that's restricted just to women. So yeah, he certainly got a lot out of it too.
There's certainly a gendered aspect that is also like, I want you to read it, men. I want you to read it and understand.
And I think that's something that really, like, one of the reasons it really resonated with me, like I said, I read it when I was 33. And I have just this year, like, I've had a big career change and, like, a bit personal, but I kind of decided that I probably don't want children. I ended an engagement. Yeah, like it was a lot of kind of big life stuff that happened, basically because I reached this fork in the road where I said, you know, if I go down this path, this is the future I'm headed for, and I'm not quite sure I want that. And there are moments in Tokyo Tararuba Girls where they ask themselves these questions. They say, is it worth sacrificing on X for the sake of Y? And is it worth sacrificing on being with someone whose company you enjoy and, you know, feels really fulfilled, but they're not as available as you want them to be? Or should you settle for this kind of mediocre situation? And, you know, that's not quite the situation I was in, but
okay.
Just to be really, really clear. No, my situation was that I've been with someone for a while. It's not like I just started dating somebody and, you know, the relationship just didn't work out. We moved on. But relationships not working out when you're 33 feel very different to relationships not working out when you're 23. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, I've got plenty of time. I've got loads of these years ahead of me. How many opportunities are ahead? Whereas at 33, it's like, is this actually what I want at all? So there's just a lot of big life questions that these characters are asking themselves. And I'd never seen characters asking themselves these questions before in any story that I'd encountered, actually.
Yeah, this does feel pretty unique. I was like, I don't know. Like, even they reference a lot of dramas in it, like
they do.
The Gossip Girl is the young one, but like they also talk about Sex in the City a lot and stuff, and I was like, but that's not like comparable to what this is. I feel in some way it feels very disconnected from it still.
Disconnected from
Tokyo Tarareba Girls. Like, it's like a totally different story still, but like related.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they reference that within Tokyo Tararuba Girls. They're like, oh, it's not like we're in one of those foreign dramas where the women share an apartment and they eat pizza together and they just talk about men all the time. And it's not quite the same, but it is women facing similar things. I mean, absolutely. I think anyone who enjoyed Sex in the City, who also likes manga, would get a lot out of this.
Yes, they should definitely read it.
Yeah, I think so. Gossip Girl, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure.
I really liked Gossip Girl, but
I love Gossip Girl. It's kind of I was gonna say guilty pleasure. I'm not sure how guilty I feel, but it's one that I really enjoy, but it's not really comparable to what's going on here. They do talk about like brands and like fashion and stuff like that, but it's in the sense of, well, if I'm single and failing, at least I've got lots of money because I have a good job.
at least I look cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, even some of the things they mentioned there, I really related to. They go through whole like analyses of, and I'm wearing this dress to convey this sort of impression, and I'm pairing it with this coat so I give this sort of impression. I was like, yes, that's exactly it.
Yep. That's actually the I guess the parts that I had the most trouble relating to, because I am neither fashionable nor do I drink. I'm just like, okay.
Oh, wow.
I understand alcohol is like a big, big part here, but I'm just like,
yeah,
all right.
That's huge, isn't it?
I know. But yeah, I've never really been a drinker, so I'm just like, interesting.
Yeah, that was one thing that I really did relate to. I am a drinker, and you know, Linkle has these scenes where she's a messy drunk, and I'm not quite like her, but you know, I have had some moments, and I look at her making these mistakes and it's kind of cringeworthy, but only because it resonates, it hits hard. But there were moments then later on when somebody says to her, like, do you drink, and treats it as a positive, and yeah. That also resonates. Like, it's nice to be able to have this kind of social habit in common. I guess it must be how smokers feel, that I've never smoked. So just to feel like, yes, this is something that we can do together, and we can have a conversation over a drink, and that's fine. And I'm not being judged for it in any way, which, you know, at that point she's been judged a lot very publicly. So she was probably just relieved by that point.
Yeah. I feel like I've hung out with enough drinkers to be like, yeah, this feels real. This feels like how this goes down for you. I've heard your stories. Yeah, I guess before we move on to like full on spoiler stuff, I just wanted to know like what your absolute favorite thing about the series is.
That's a big question. My favorite thing is just how relatable it feels. But yeah. I guess to try and express that a bit more clearly, I think this is a series that does speak about women's experiences very honestly. And I say women there, this is not a universal, all women definitely experience this. Mm-hmm. But there are, as you said, there is a gendered aspect to this. I felt like this year, I felt like I had particular pressure to make decisions before I turned 35, mm-hmm. because that has a big impact on if you want children or not. Mm-hmm. That's a big decision that you have to make if you have a uterus. Particularly.
Yeah.
So that was something that I felt was a huge source of pressure this year. And to see that kind of acknowledged and discussed in such an honest way. And, you know, these characters, they don't look particularly good all the time. They are judgmental. They make bad decisions. They make themselves look bad. There's so much in there that is just really raw. Mm-hmm. And it's so far away from what can be very romanticized romance in manga. So yeah, that's something I really appreciate. It's not afraid to look at kind of the uglier sides of this experience.
I would agree with all that. I'm trying to be like, what's my favorite thing? But I'm like, no, it's just that it's really relatable. And like, even if you don't relate to everything, because I don't, I think there's like,
no.
There's one thing in there that you're going to relate to so hard and you're just going to be like, that's my life. Like,
that's exactly
understand.
It. Yeah, for sure. No, I don't relate to all of the characters, but, you know, I relate to enough of it that, like you say, the impact that has is more than enough.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just, my brain is amazed that such a, because it does feel like a fairly realistic, like simple story, but I'm like, but it's just so engaging. Like reading it, you're just like, I got to read more. I got to know what the Tara and Reba are going to say, the liver and milk things are going to like. What snarky things are they going to say to them? Like, I don't know. I need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I first encountered it when there were only 3 volumes. I actually reviewed it for Otaku USA. So I had a review copy. I had, I think, the first 3 volumes as review copies. And of all the things that I was sent to review that month, it was hands down the only one that I was like, no, I need to read more. I have to read more. Where is more? And I actually bought the final 3 volumes in Japanese because I was just so desperate to get to them. So I read the final 3 volumes in Japanese and I still, yeah, absolutely loved it.
I would say that by the end, I was kind of like, oh, is that the ending? Like, all right.
That is something we can discuss in the spoiler zone.
Yeah, spoiler zone time, y'all. All right. So this is where we will discuss our like favorite scenes, any themes we want to bring up. Obviously, love confessions and the whole ending, because that's a pretty big pretty stuff goes down.
It does.
But we'll start off softballing it. I'll say some of my favorite scenes. So the thing that I related to the most, which is actually really applicable to now with Star Wars having come out, was everything with Rinko and the movie dude. What was it? Okuda was his name, I think.
Yeah.
So it's basically she goes out with this guy and he, you know, their initial engagement is like, oh, they were looking for the same movie in a rental place and they connect over movies. And Rinko's like, this is great. And he's like, it's great. You're a screenwriter. Like, we have such mutual interests.
Yeah.
But then slowly she finds out that he's like maybe a little too obsessed with movies. Like everything's a movie reference for him. And she's like, oh, I want to watch this movie. And he's like, nah, like, let's watch The Dark Knight instead. It's one of the best movies ever.
And she's like, yep, here it comes, The Dark Knight. That one film.
Got it. And like that whole panel to me, I was just like, yes, this is the argument that I have with Jeff, who is my significant other, all the time. And then I'm just like,
really?
No, it is. Because like, I'm just like, I don't care about superhero movies. Like, I think they're pretty boring. Like, I don't like Star Wars because I just think it's really basic and people, like, have made it. Like, the important part of Star Wars is that people have made it into something bigger than I think what it actually is in text. Okay. At least just watching the movies. There's a bunch of text, so there's a lot to go on there. But having only watched the movies, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I don't understand. And I always get frustrated because I'm like, I know that sometimes I want to go see silly movies. Like, I'm not ashamed of this, but like, I'm a really big Nicholas Sparks fan. So like, I go and see all the movies that get turned, like all the ones that get turned into movies, which is a significant amount. And I'm like, I just want to watch a nice little romantic drama. Okay, like, can we just do that?
Yes. This is something actually that I found. The older I get, the more I kind of want to drop the idea that, you know, I always want to see films to be challenged and that kind of thing. And the kind of the more comfortable I'm becoming with saying, you know what, I really like Jose Romance, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I just really like watching characters fall in love. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't understand why everything has to, we don't, and yeah, Jeff has a, like, I try to only go see movies that have, like, really good ratings from critics that I love. And I'm like, don't you just want to, like, take a chance on a movie sometimes? Like, don't you just want to be like, maybe I'll like it? Like, I don't really understand this mentality. Yeah, and I just think, I mean, there's a whole, I think the Twilight director of the awful Twilight movies, I'm not going to defend Twilight, but like, I'm pretty sure, you know, the director has said good things of like, you know, Twilight is basically the equivalent of a superhero movie, but like, culture gives more gravitas to a superhero movie than it does to women's fantasies. And like,
exactly,
she won an award for like being an action director, but then superhero movies passed up on her and all these things. And I'm like, yeah, it's garbage. Like, that's how I feel. And the fact that most men in my life can't acknowledge it, I'm just like, eh, okay, you're wrong.
Oh, that's a challenge. I completely understand what you mean. I've not been in that situation, thankfully, but when watching that kind of episode of Rinko's life, and she just says, you know, I'm just getting tired, like, this, it's really hard keeping up this image, basically.
Yeah.
And he starts asking her, oh, have you seen this movie? And she starts lying, because actually she knows if she says I haven't seen it, he'll suggest that they watch it together. And that sounds like a really nice thing, and her friends don't get it. They're like, you know, you're so lucky, you get to watch films with this guy in this bar that he runs, there he makes you bespoke cocktails, you know, what's wrong, this sounds like the dream.
Yeah.
And it's hard for her to explain to them, no, actually, it's really exhausting trying to just hold a conversation through movies. I just want to talk to him, and he puts it all through this filter. And when he says, it's my dream that on New Year's Eve, every year we'll make a top 30 list of films together. And there was a part of me that was like, that actually sounds really fun. But at the same time, her thought process after that is, I can't possibly make a top 30 films list with a guy who won't include Sex and the City on it.
Yeah.
Because that was a really important film for her. And he just dismisses that out of hand. So it's not even just that he's focused on films. It's, as you say, it's the fact that he disregards and devalues the films that are important to her.
Yeah.
And that's untenable. You can't have a relationship on that basis unless you compromise drastically, which she refuses to do. And I am so pleased that she refuses to do it.
Yeah, I mean, even from a practical standpoint, I was like, making a top 30 list sounds exhausting because I'm like, wait, do I even watch 30 movies in a year? Like, how many movies you gotta watch to make a then top 30? You gotta watch a movie every day. That's like
I could see some. I don't know. We've been talking in Anafem about what our top anime of the year are and that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, it'd be really fun if I were dating someone who was interested in anime as well. Maybe we could put together our own top 10 list or something. And like, yeah, that could be really fun. But not if he wasn't prepared to put like Jose anime on there, for example. Mm. Like if he just instantly said, oh, you know, I'm not interested in that. Yeah, that would be a huge problem for me. So I think Ninko's instincts are good. She doesn't always communicate exactly what she means well to her friends. And they know her really well, so they kind of disregard what she says half the time anyway. And like that's something I love about it. I didn't say earlier, but the representation of female friendship in this is beautiful. The way that they care for each other so deeply that it doesn't actually need to be discussed. You know, you've got some stories out there where they have groups of female friends and they say to each other, I love you. And, you know, that's really sweet. But that's not my experience of my day to day with my friends. It is making fun of each other. It is kind of being each other's, like, I guess, wingman. And like, you know, you like that guy. What do you need? Tell me what you need me to do and I will do it for you. And I will make this circumstance as perfect for you as possible because you're my friend and I care about you. But you don't actually need to say you care about them. They're just there for each other. And that's understood.
Yeah.
Like, I love that.
I also think it's refreshing that it's not a story of them like turning on each other. Like, yeah, they have arguments, but there's always I feel like a lot of these stories normally go like, and then they got interested in the same guy and like tried to sabotage each other. And I'm like, oh God, thank God it's not that. And
actually, it's kind of the opposite of that almost. Like through their relationships, like each of them is telling the other, like, you're better than him. You deserve to be with someone better. And they're kind of supporting each other so that whether they're with a guy or not, they're still okay. And, you know, it ends up with them not being in these perfect fairy tale romance situations.
Yeah.
And they're not at any point in these perfect fairy tale romance situations. Even so, probably the closest you get is Ninko and the movie guy. And it looks so perfect on the outside. And then as soon as she gets into it, it's like, no, this is not right. And I love that they did that. That's a really unusual circumstance to find in a story about women.
Yeah. So I always appreciate things that, depict female friendship because I always feel like it either goes like a catty route or there are no female friendships because it's all dudes and there's only one girl.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's part of why I like some shoujo series too, like Kimi ni Todoke. I think I like more for the depiction of the female friendship than I do for any of their romance. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Oh, right. That's fine, but like, who cares?
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about Mami in this because actually Mami is set up as, she's kind of set up as the rival, but she just refuses to play that part at any point.
Yes.
So she kind of beats Ninko in every way. So she ends up dating the man that Ninko had kind of assumed she was going to be, end up in a relationship with. And she takes Rinko's spot in a professional appointment. She kind of takes over her office. She really kind of invades what Ninko has considered to be her space, and from a position of being both junior and younger. Mm-hmm. But she does it in such a likable way, and it's always giving Ninko respect and gratitude and treating her well. It's never in like you say, in that kind of catty way. It's never like that.
Yeah.
And so they end up with this position of mutual respect. And I just love that. That would have been so easy to get wrong.
Yeah.
And I think the other woman is a theme that kind of comes up repeatedly. And I think whoever is the other woman in any situation, they're never treated as a villain. And that would have been so easy to do with several of them. And it just doesn't happen. I think the only villain really is Ki. And he's kind of also the hero. And
Yeah. I'm like, Ki is the least likable part of this. But
yeah, he's a real problem. And it's actually, I know we're going to talk about shipping later, but it's why I can't possibly ship him and Ninko. He treats her so badly. And he constantly undermines her. And he does it so publicly, he humiliates her. He does it out of choice. She asks him not to. He says he doesn't care. There is no part of him that values the things that he should value about her to be in a relationship. And Rinko kind of, you know, she takes a risk on him, but I kind of almost feel like she shouldn't have. But at the same time, I mean, you've read right to the end, he says.
Yeah.
So the fact that she chooses between kind of settled, stable guy that she knows she gets on with, and they want the same things, and she ends up choosing Key, knowing very well that it could end badly. And I have some sympathy for that choice. I mean, that's essentially what happened to me this year, is I walked away from what could have been a very, very good relationship. Mm-hmm. But, you know, not for anyone else, but the fact is, I can understand her turning her back on that and saying, you know, I'm going to go for the unpredictable. I'm going to go for the situation where I can't predict the outcome and where it could end badly. I know that. That's fine. I'm accepting that possibility, despite early spending like 9 volumes berating myself for not making better choices earlier in my life. Right now, I'm making a decision. I'm making it knowing that it could end badly. And yeah, I just kind of wish it hadn't been Key.
Yeah.
So I respect that she makes that decision. And I love the fact that Higashimura doesn't make it obvious. Like, she actually, it could have been a win-win if she'd ended the manga with her saying with Hayasaka. I would have been like, yep, fair enough as well.
Yeah.
So either situation is a good outcome, I think, in telling the story of this particular character.
That's true. I'm like, I respect Rinko's line of thought in that decision.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm just like, I just don't like Key, though. And I feel bad for Mr. Hayasaka.
Exactly.
Oh, so sad.
It is.
But I do really, really appreciate Mami.
Because
I agree that, you know, she could have been, in the end, like, a total rival and just, like, played into the stereotypes of, like, young people are more interesting than older people and they always win. Like, ugh, whatever. No. But in the end, she, like, you know, drives for 3 hours to go help Rinko make a decision and all these things. And they're totally, she like becomes part of the friend group by the end. I'm like, that's great.
Exactly.
I love
it. And it's not that she gets these things because she's young. I think they do a really good job of making that clear. They do. Higashimura does a really good job of making that clear. So Mami, like there's a scene where she's called to the set because they want to rewrite because the sponsors didn't like something she'd written. And she's like, oh yeah, I thought that they might think that. So I wrote an alternative version last night. And because I guessed that on the way to the studio, I actually emailed it to them. So they should have finished reading it right about now. And oh yeah, we can continue with shooting without losing a second of the schedule. That is efficiency. That is organization. That is thinking ahead. Mami is not just young. She is genuinely talented and she is genuinely driven, and her ambition is just so beautiful to see. And Rinko like isn't really threatened by it. Almost Rinko looks at it and is like, oh, I used to be like that. And that was another thing that I found intensely relatable, because I started Anime Feminist kind of after a period of time where I was thinking I have no ambition anymore. I kind of hit a point when I was 30 31 where I was just like, I don't even know what I want. I have no direction. I'm just kind of existing. And that's more or less like the situation that Rinko finds herself in at one point. And so I have real, real sympathy for her kind of looking at Mami and being like, I remember being that driven. What happened? What changed? So it was really great to see her doing the North Izu tourism shoot that Key gets for her. And she ends up kind of remembering what it's like to love her job and remembering what it's like to feel that motivated again. But she does it all without ever slamming Mami. Mami's just ambitious and capable. And so is Rinko, and she just has to remember that.
Yeah. I think you mentioned, like, the one nice thing that maybe Key did. Maybe it was nice. I don't know.
I still don't know.
Yeah, right? It's like, oh, he tore her apart, but like maybe that was good and then he got her this thing, but then he still sucks. I don't know.
I still don't really understand his motivations, and I just, I don't really trust him. I don't really like him, and I think Rinko could do better. But Rinko also made a very conscious decision to walk away from what many would consider to be better. So, you know, there's some merit to that. But yeah. Poor Hayasaka.
Hayasaka. But yeah, in relation to Mami's, you know, just genuine talent, like, I really liked when she went on the, she had, like, one line where she was just like, I guess it was when Rinko and her were talking about why she broke up with Hayasaka and has all these boys, but like doesn't stay in a long relationship and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Mami was like, well, I'd rather focus on my work right now. Like, I want to make millions of people happy versus just like this one mediocre person over here. Like, what, whatever. And I was like, yes. Yeah. So good.
It really is. And that, I mean, again, super relatable. At the moment, I'm just completely immersed in work and I'm loving it. And I completely get why Mami is thinking, you know, the one person kind of doesn't matter. And especially because Hayasaka was very clearly on kind of a marriage and babies track.
Yeah.
Mami's like got no time for that right now. She's busy.
Yeah.
So I think that Mami is a great character. And I did not expect that when we first met her. I thought she was just going to be kind of a joke character. And instead, she's really more of a foil for Rinko in ways that I didn't expect.
Yeah, I guess because she's like Harajuku, like silly fashion choices, sort of. So you're like, okay, this seems like a strange pairing that Rinko has taken in, but I see it now. I feel it.
But at the same time, yeah, she has this respect for Rinko right the way through. And we know that Rinko's good at her job. And we know that she does have a very different kind of approach and perspective to Mami. And Mami really does want to learn from her. And then it hits a point where she's like, yep, I can strike out on my own now, basically. And yeah, that's great. That's exactly what she should be doing in her early 20s.
Yes. Do you have any like favorite scenes that you'd want to bring up specifically?
Oh, goodness. I'm not sure that there's specific scenes, but there's, you know, every time there's like a monologue voiceover almost, and then you see some kind of metaphor. Like every single one of those.
So many metaphors.
So many. Like there's Kaori when she's looking at looking at a sushi conveyor belt, I think. And she's thinking, yeah, this is what happens. Men go past you, but unlike on a sushi conveyor belt, they don't come back. And it would be really convenient if you could just kind of watch them go around once and then have your choice the next time it comes around.
Yeah.
I was like, this is something that many, many, many people must have thought is I want those chances back again. And, you know, I don't particularly want any of the chances that that I had with people I dated in my 20s. I think exes are usually exes for a reason. But I completely relate to that thought process of I didn't recognize the opportunity at the time. And I wish it would come around again and just have a label on it telling me what it is this time so I can recognize it for what it is. And there's so many times when they're like in battlefields.
Yeah.
Like any of those moments where they're just there's a monologue about some kind of experience they've just gone through, and it is always so relatable. So all of those times, they're really wordy pages as well. They're just full of words.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just kind of glaze over, but not with this. Not with any of those pages in Tokyo Tarada Girls.
Yeah, the only time that I struggled with the wordiness was actually in the like side back Tarare bar things. I was like, I don't really care. I'm skipping those.
Yeah. No, I think they're not main story. They don't count. It's fine. Yeah. Although the conversations with the author herself, you know, the author's notes that she
does. Oh, I read those. Yeah, I read those.
They're amazing. Yeah. Where she's like, actually, I'm super married with children, but this is about all my female friends who are really worried about being single before the Olympics.
Yeah, and she's like, I support you all. And no matter what you want to do, like, you don't need to be married. If you want to be married, okay, that's fine too. I'm like, there you go.
And they would come up to her and like, why did you write this horror story? And there was a point, I think, there's a moment where Rinko hits rock bottom, I think, and like she's just lost her job and she doesn't, like she's got dumped and she's in a really bad situation and she just falls down drunk and Key finds her fall down drunk. And I just looked at all of that and it was, really, really hard to see.
Yeah. So I guess relating to food, food is a very, very big metaphor here. There are literally food talks to them in hallucinations or whatever. So that's fun. But yeah, I actually really liked that metaphor of like, this is also personal, but like petty personal, in that I find choosing what to eat every day is like such an unnecessary struggle. Like I'm like, I don't know. I don't really care, but like if I'm presented choices and person's like, well, then eat this. I'll be like, no, I don't want that though. You know, like I'm really just like annoying about it in every single way. And I'm like, yeah, dating men is definitely kind of like that. Like you need it. Like you need companionship to survive. But like it always goes away because you like have done it, but then you have to choose a new thing and you're just like, I don't know. And you could just eat the same thing every day, but that's boring. And like, it's just such a struggle. Hate food. I think it was relevant in the story because at the point where Mr. Hayasaka and Rinko like decide to become a couple and like move in together or whatever, one of Mr. Hayasaka's reasons is that he's like, oh, you know, I watched you eat that gyoza and I was just like, yeah, we could do this every day. Like, I could watch you eat every day. Like, that's fine. I'm like, yep, that is actually the test of a relationship. It's like, can you sit there and eat with each other every day and, like, stand how that person eats? Like, that's a legitimate relationship concern.
It is. And they all have really different situations. So you've got, like, Koyuki, who ends up, like, cooking for this guy. Even though she says, like, oh, I actually don't want to cook for a guy, I want to be taken out to eat, she ends up cooking for this guy because they can't really meet anywhere else because he's married and so it's inconvenient. But then you've got Rinko, who's like, you know, I can't really cook, I can make pasta, but I much prefer it when a guy cooks for me. And then you've got Kaori, who kind of just wants to be treated. I think she just wants to be taken out. But she remembers back to when she was dating her musician boyfriend Yo. She remembers back to when they just had ramen to get like cup ramen together in their kind of grotty apartment. And like, it's just the fact that it's kind of represented in all these different ways. Like, I think that was something done quite deliberately. And it's kind of the way that you have food with somebody and kind of the situation where you're most comfortable eating with somebody, I think does say things about a relationship. Mm-hmm. And in each of these, you know, Koyuki ends up cooking for the guy, even though she doesn't want to. Kaori does get taken out to these fancy places, but she's also like, oh, I remember when you used to just have cut ramen together and that was nice too. Yeah. And Rinko gets cooked for, but she doesn't actually, you know, when they actually are eating, he always wants to put a movie on in front of her. He doesn't actually want to talk to her.
Yeah.
So she doesn't get the experience that she wants either. And, you know, in all of these relationships, they're not right for them. So I think that does actually say something about them hugely.
Yeah. And then there was also the food playing a big part, at least in the one chapter where they try to explain how within their female friendship and what they where they hang out and have their girl talks has changed.
Yes,
and they're like, now they wouldn't have like cafe or latte or whatever, they would go to somewhere else and like blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yep, food.
It's so true though. I remember I used to go out to these like expensive bars. I mean, I work in London, mm-hmm. and I worked in London in my 20s as well, and I would meet friends and we'd spend like £10 a drink, which is a lot of money. And it was, you know, I look back now and I'm like, oh, way too much hassle. That's way too much money. And at this point, I'm far more likely to just like, you know, meet friends somewhere where we can kind of buy a cheap beer, like eat really cheap snacks if we even bother eating. So I read that bit where they're like, do we actually have to do this? Or can we just go to a cheap pub and like relax and be ourselves? I was like, yes, I completely get it.
Yeah. As a non-drinker, I've always been like, I feel like I save so much money this way.
Yeah, that's true. So that's very, very true. Cannot deny.
Cannot deny. Woo! Yeah, and then the other thing I wanted like metaphorically discuss was the Olympics. Because in the beginning, I was like, it's very strange that this keeps harping on the Tokyo 2020 Olympics and like making sports metaphors of like Rinko's like, we're on the baseball team and now like I'm a pinch hitter for the over 30s and like I can't strike out or it's all done for. And I'm just like, okay, I find this a little weird. But then in thinking about it, I was like, you know, I think I actually kind of like it. Like, I think I like the resonance of 2020, both her being 40, like 2020 adds up to 40. Mm-hmm. 2020 vision, she sees the past more clearly, but is also like, oh god, what do I do in the future? Like, that's really what I need. How does the past inform what I'm going to do in the future? And like all these struggles, and I'm like, all right, I dig it now. I feel like it gets a little dropped halfway through. It's not as mentioned how she, like, they see the bridge every once in a while and whatever, but I'm like, all right, you know, manga, that's just how it goes.
Well, that was a literal situation as well, wasn't it? Where the author, like, her friends suddenly all started like going into high gear to try and find husbands before the 2020 Olympics.
I was just and like, this is so culturally specific, but like, I still like it.
I'm not sure it is. So we had the Olympics here in 2012. And I was 29 that year. And I didn't think of it at that point in terms of, you know, must be married by then. But I certainly in, gosh, when would they have been announced? Let's say 7 years earlier. So what, like 2005 or something. So I'm in university studying Japanese and thinking, oh, there's no way I'm going to be in London in 2012. I'm going to be living in Japan. Oh. And this like looking ahead and saying, this is what I want my life to be like by then. And what you expect your life to be like. And, you know, when I was in university, obviously, I was looking ahead at a really long period of time. And I was like, yeah, I've got, you know, the world is my oyster, all these opportunities. Whereas had they made that announcement now, I think I might have been thinking in those lines of, oh, I'm going to be 40 by then, because I will be 40. in 2020, I will be 40. No, that's not right. That's not the way maths works. But I will be close enough that, do you know what? Give me 2 seconds. I need to work out exactly how old I'll be. I'm 34 now. It's 2017. Okay, so I will be in, yeah, 37. That's right. Okay. Slight diversion. Very sorry. I'm losing track on my own age. That's how bad it's got. But yeah, I completely understand hitting that point. And even if I'd been looking at it and saying, okay, I'm going to be 37. Where do I want to be by 37? And you know, I only just decided this year that I probably don't want children. Had I looked at this 5 years ago, I would have been saying, oh, well, of course, by 37, I'll have a family, I'll have children, I'll have a house, I'll probably have a mortgage. These are the things that I want. Mm-hmm. And now at 34, I'm saying, no, actually, that's not necessarily what I want. But I've been feeling the pressure of that situation for the past, what, 15 years or so.
Yeah.
So, I have a lot of sympathy for them saying, like, this big milestone event is happening and I can see what my life is going to be like at that point and I'm not content with where I see it headed. I do have sympathy for that. I think it's like you were saying earlier, where you can kind of understand Inko's thinking, but you don't necessarily think you would have thought in exactly the same way as her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the way I feel about it, maybe. Sorry, that was kind of garbled.
No, that's cool. I'm just like, oh, I guess I should start measuring my life by Olympics.
Yeah, it's a bad habit to fall into. But I do remember even when they announced the 2012 Olympics and I was thinking, oh, there's no way I'm going to be in London. That's going to be a mess. And actually, I was working in London in 2012. And I was going to work every day and we had the Olympics on at work. And I never could have predicted that I would have been in that situation because I had no intention of even being in the same country, let alone working in that city.
Well, was it a mess?
It actually wasn't, no, because people, like, everyone assumed it was going to be a mess. So everyone made kind of contingency plans to not be in the capital. And then, you know, it was totally empty. So I'm taking the train to work in the morning like, oh, this is even emptier than usual. Brilliant.
I feel like that's how it normally works out, yeah.
So I didn't really, like, the sports metaphor side didn't resonate with me as much, actually, because I never played sports, but you did, right?
Yeah, I did. I play hockey.
Right. So does that resonate with you more, do you think?
I mean, it was kind of like a mixed thing where I was like, yeah, I mean, getting older in sports is bad too. Like, that makes sense, right? Like, yeah. The older you get, the slower you are. I just had that experience this weekend where I actually play with legitimately, they are much older than me. I play on a team with, like, much older women. They're, like, probably average above 40. Some of them were like close to 60. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. But so we were playing people that were much closer to my age. So I'm like, yes, they're just faster than you. Like, technically, skill wise, you know, you could be the same. But if they're faster, that's just how it's going to go.
Yeah, you can't do anything about that.
Yeah. So I was like, this makes sense to me. And I guess the Olympics thing was like, I am, you know, personally curious how Tokyo would be during the Olympics since I keep going there like once a year now. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise I was like, food metaphor is better. All the food metaphors are better.
I like the way that they kind of they talk about it like it's a battlefield. And, you know, again, that's not a situation that I can personally relate to. But the fact that they portray it in such a high stakes way. And the fact that it's kind of putting up your defenses and feeling like you have to attack and make the first move. And I do think it can feel that way when you've got that kind of pressure over you of you must make decisions quickly and they must be the right decisions and you cannot mess up because you do not have time to mess up when you're 33. If you date somebody for 2 years and it doesn't work out, you're 35. You don't have time. So, I mean, this is all kind of prevalent on the idea that you do want children, I think, because if you don't want children, that time pressure is much more, it's lifted off you.
That's true.
If you do want children, and we kind of have no reason to believe that they don't, mm-hmm. I think, and certainly like Kari, I think we know she does.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what they're facing, that idea that, you know, they really don't have time to make mistakes and get it wrong. And so I liked how that was portrayed, but I don't kind of have the sports experience that it feels that high stakes to me. So,
I mean, it's certainly like 33 is like getting old for an athlete. Like as soon as you get over 35, like you're certainly just like an old athlete. Especially for, you know, sports like ice hockey, NHL people, it's really weird for me now to look and watch NHL games and be like, half of these people are younger than me. Like, that's really strange because that's very different than what it was the whole experience. I was like, oh, all these people are so old. But now the best people are like 20. And I'm like, what? I don't understand. This is so weird. So in that way, it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's no coincidence that they are set in a world where they have musicians and they have models and they have actors in Tokyo Tararuba Girls. And they are constantly surrounded by people who are young and professional and, you know, just full of enthusiasm and motivation. And, you know, that's not a metaphor. That's just within the text of the story. These are the kinds of people that unfortunately they're surrounded by. So they get their faces rubbed in it all the time. The fact that they're kind of over the hill in that sense, like even when they go to the dating bar, it's like specifically for singles. And there's all these older men and they're like, oh, well, at least, you know, they're the same age as us. And then they look around and all the women are younger. They're all in their 20s. And there's just that gap that 30-something women are in where it's like you're technically, you know, you're young enough that you can get married and you can still have the dream. You can have the children and the house and the mortgage, etc. But they're not so young that they're going to be seen as desirable by men their age. Now, that's not obviously not true for everyone, but that certainly can be how it feels.
Yeah.
I think when you're surrounded by models, musicians, actors and that kind of thing. And watching something like Gossip Girl, I imagine, would be really unhelpful for Rinko's ego.
I was just kind of like Koyuki's the only one who doesn't really deal with those things except through Kaori and Rinko, but I guess that's enough.
She does things quite differently, though, doesn't
she?
She sees herself as a capable woman. And that's kind of, she's like, no, I understand how this works. If I do this process of actions in this order, at this time, in this way, then I will get to the desired outcome. And she gets there and the guy's married. And she hasn't made a mistake, but it's still an unfavorable situation. And so she ends up in that position despite kind of knowing exactly what she should do. Whereas Rinko and Kaori just kind of fall into things, I think.
Yeah.
So it's kind of her pride that she's a woman who knows what she's doing. And I've certainly got friends like that who, you know, I've got friends who've ended up in kind of almost identical situations, despite being people who seem so together and so grown up and mature and like they know exactly what they're doing. So that felt really true to me as well.
Yeah. I guess I'm like, my life experiences have been kind of strange with people that my friends have married or not married in that.
Oh, really?
So like, Jeff and I have been together since high school, which is weird.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I know Jeff, right?
Yeah.
I met him back in August. I didn't realize that you guys have been together so long. That's amazing.
Yeah. So now it's almost like 10 years.
Wow.
But what's weird is that we have friends who started dating like a week after us, like literally a week, who also like they're married now. They got married this past year. And we're just like, this is so weird. And I just feel like there's a lot of people from my high school who have married each other. And I'm like, I find this very strange. Like, it wasn't a small high school or anything. We didn't live in the middle of nowhere. Like, we lived in a suburb of a metropolitan, like one of the largest cities in America. Like, I was just like, I don't understand how this happened.
That does seem unusual. I don't know any friends of mine who were kind of together in our equivalent of high school who are still together. I don't know anyone.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Well done.
We're all weird. That's what I. That's what I concluded. I'm like, I can't explain this phenomenon. It's just strange.
I think I've seen friends in like versions of all of the experiences that I saw in Tokyo Tonight for Girls, like obviously, you know, filtered for realism because everything in there is heightened.
Yes.
But yeah, I've absolutely seen friends go through all that, those trajectories. I think I'm in a kind of equally unusual position in that most of my friends are not married and don't have children and haven't yet settled. And I'm 34. Most of my friends are 33, 34, or like people I was at school with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, most of them don't have that situation yet. So I think that's quite unusual too, actually. I think probably you and I are on either end of a spectrum of friend relationships, and somewhere between us, that's what the average experience is.
Yeah, that's what the normal people are doing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we're all like aspiring to, just normalcy. Why can't we just all be normal?
Well, see, not anymore. And that's one thing I quite liked about Tokyo Tarada the Girls, it ends in quite a weird situation where nothing's ended up where how people thought it would. And it's, you know, it ends on her 34th birthday.
Yeah.
And I read that the week of my 34th birthday.
Wow, this manga has really got you.
It really did. It really did. And the fact that she ends it in this, they're all in this quite uncertain situation still. There's no fairy tale ending. There's no happily ever after. It's, this is good for now, and I don't regret the situation I'm in. And that's kind of become my aspirational kind of position, is just to feel like I'm constantly comfortable with the decisions I've made. I think I've spent a lot of years just thinking, oh, you know, this is where I've ended up, and this is not quite where I want to be, and I wish I'd done XYZ to avoid that. And just to feel like, yes, this is the right decision, I made the right call, despite making decisions that probably society would suggest I shouldn't have made. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Rinko's position there is really enviable in that sense, and that's become really aspirational to me. Yeah, it's really got me.
It's really got you. I think that was the hard thing about reading the Tararebar like side things, is that I was like, I'm not sure that Milt and Liver's humor makes sense in this, like, especially you know, juxtapose with the comic that would come after where the author is like, I support you in any decision. And I'm like, I didn't feel that after having read those three nights out or whatever.
Yeah, no, it kind of doesn't feel supportive at all.
Yeah.
It feels very much like if you're single at this point, then that is your fault. You should fix it. And there are easy ways to fix it. Just spend less time with your friends.
Oh, I did really like the like first one I guess it was one of the early ones. And it was like, here, your standards of men should be human, alive, not dead. I was like, yes. Amazing.
Aim high.
Yeah, like that's all. And, you know, if you really have to set standards, then, like, pick one thing that you're looking for and just go with that. But I guess now we can move on to talking about love confession scenes that we do or don't agree with.
Which one did you like the best?
I don't know. I mean, it's also hard because I don't, you know, with Kaori and Koyuki, it's like, well, mm-hmm. I definitely don't want them to be with their people, even though they, like, say nice things. Things. That's but no. And then like Mr. Hayasaka, I'm just like, I'd be depressed if I was you.
I kind of love that. She's got a thing about ugly rings, right?
Oh yeah.
So because this happens in Princess Jellyfish too, where a character goes to propose to another character, giving no spoilers whatsoever, and just goes out of his way to buy the ugliest ring. And she's kind of done it again here. She's not made quite such a feature of it, but it's another example of just the ring representing kind of all her hopes and dreams. And actually, if Mr. Hayasaka had pulled out a Bulgari ring when he faced Ninko the first time when she was 23, she might have gone for it.
Yeah.
Because she was 23. And that's what Mami does. That's how she makes her decision. Because she's like, oh, well, he pulled out a Bulgari ring and they're pretty expensive, right? So he'll probably treat me really well.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair.
Yes. I really like that first scene when she's just kind of being really judgmental, but
it's fair. I mean, I'm like, they didn't go out before, and now he's just busting out a ring. Like, I don't know. What else are you supposed to judge it on?
And he does the same thing with Mommy when he wants to just kind of start dating this 19-year-old or however old she is. She is 19, isn't she?
Yeah, that's what they said.
He's like, you know, I've got a ring for her. Can I test it on you? It's like, if you're not dating a 19-year-old already, maybe you shouldn't have a ring for her.
Like, yeah, that's weird. I don't understand.
A huge step. Yeah, exactly. But I really liked Movie Guy, actually. Just, he's so direct with Rinko. He's just so honest with her. And when she says to him, are you single? And he says, yes. And do you want to get married? And then just like, he's like, I'm just kidding. But that is a conversation I had with my ex-fiance. In our first week together, he was like, oh, we should just get married. And then, only joking. And then, like, two, three years later, we're engaged.
Yeah.
And I just thought that the kind of directness of that conversation, after seeing them, like, all of the characters play so many games the whole way through, they're like, okay, how do we strategically approach this human interaction?
That's true. And
that moment where she just kind of, it occurs to her, I need to know if he's single because my friends are seeing people who aren't single and I know it's bad for them and I don't want that. So let me just ask him straight out. And she does it without consulting with her friend. She just goes ahead and does it. And he answers really directly. And I just love that. And his confession to her was really direct as well. And it was just really grown up and organic. And it wasn't the kind of structured, I bought you a Bulgari ring confession of that Hayasaka was doing that she kind of thought she wanted. But actually, that kind of direct communication probably suited Rinko better. And I think you could even say that that's probably the reason that she and Ki eventually did connect, is because they were just really honest with each other. And that was really painful at the beginning, but over time it becomes less painful.
Oh, Ki is nothing if not honest.
Exactly. I think we've got some evidence for the fact that Rinko appreciates that when it's kind of honesty in a way that's kind of flattering to her, I guess. Like when she goes to North Izu and everyone's like, oh, you're so young, and you know.
Yeah.
And then they're just being really sincere and she loves it because it's really flattering to her.
I guess I liked Movie Guy's like initial interaction with her too, because I'm like, oh, this feels natural, like the coincidental thing where you just met in a place and then you're like, oh yeah, you figured out something, some connection, and you're like, oh, this seems fun, like maybe we should pursue this a little. And I'm like, yes, great. Wasn't work or anything.
It was a good little meet cute. And you know, in retrospect, it makes perfect sense, because the film that they bonded over was a romantic comedy. It's Green Card, and of course she would be attracted to somebody who likes that film enough to rent it. But then it turns out the reason he's renting it is because he doesn't own romantic comedies, because he doesn't rate them enough to own them. So even from then, it's like the seeds are there. But yeah, she thought they had loads of stuff in common because of the way that they met. And yeah, it would have been a great connection if he'd just been a better human being.
Yeah, it was effective how creepy he came off eventually. I was like, wow.
I was a little bit worried it was going to go too cartoony when he's like pushing her to get her hair done at the salon.
Yeah, the hair thing was a little far.
I think like that was a step too far. Higashimura didn't need to go that far. She just had to have him constantly talking about films.
Yeah.
And asking Rinko, like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And like putting films on instead of talking to her. Like that kind of thing, that would have been just fine. And I think that would have been kind of almost more relatable on its own. The hair salon thing was a bit too much.
Yeah, I could see him having said it once, but then he said it like three times and I was like, all right.
Yeah, here. Every day he's like, have you been to the salon? Have you been to the salon yet? It's like, no, just for him to say that once, like you say, that's unsettling enough. But it does lead to this great conversation between Rinko, Kaori, and Koyuki, where they're talking about whether they can or can't compromise on that and like where their line is. And Kaori makes some comment like, it's, you know, it's one thing if it's your clothes, but your hairstyle is very different. And Koyuki's like, I won't even compromise on my clothes. What are you talking about? And then Mami comes into work and she's dyed her hair black because Mr. Hayasaka said that he thought it might look good on her. And it's just that conversation of what it means to compromise and when you should and when you shouldn't. Like that was, I think, a really valuable conversation. And it essentially is the foundation of Tokyo Taraliba Girls, is like, do you compromise on what you think is best for you right now based on what you think you might want in the future? Or do you not? Do you stick to what you think you want at the moment? So
yeah, I kind of like Mammy. Again, she is younger, so she has time to like correct things. But I feel like she was like, yeah, he was like, maybe you'd look good in black hair. So she's like, oh, I decided to try it. Like, why not? It'll pass. Like, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Even though it kind of, it does change her, like her identity and kind of the way people relate to her. Because the characters all mention her hair. They talk about her pink hair. They talk about her blonde hair. That's how they kind of see her identity, as just the Harajuku girl. And she just gets rid of all of that and dyes it black and doesn't really care. But like you said, she's got time to just kind of play around with that. And Dinko doesn't have that attitude at all.
That makes sense. Well, is there anything else you'd want to mention before we do a love quiz?
Oh, I think we've covered the main things of it. I just love it so much. I was rereading it for this podcast and I was just kept getting kind of carried away. And like, I really, the first time I read it through, I did a lot of kind of live tweeting of it. So I put up loads of screenshots.
Yeah.
into my Twitter, and I really wanted to do that again. I was like, no, I don't have time.
I don't have time for this.
There's so much that's quotable in it, and there are all these moments. I did end up putting one up, I think, where I was like, nope, still effective, because it's the first time I'm reading it since turning 34. And I was like, how's it going to hit me this time? And then I came across something quotable like 2 pages later. I was like, I need to resist the urge to just do this every 2 pages.
Yep, that's what I found when reading it too.
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, I want to take a picture of this. But, like, eventually I was like, well, I don't want to, like, now I'm in volume, like, 6. Probably just, like, spoil
I stopped too
many
for
things.
The Japanese volumes. Yeah, there are a few things, especially when I read the final volume on her 34th birthday and I was turning 34. And there were a couple of things that they say around that I wanted to screenshot and put up. And I was like, no, you can't. This is getting to an unfair point now.
Yeah, right? Like, you're like, this isn't... One or two volumes, 3, like, okay. But after that, you're like, this is just story and you don't know what's going on anymore.
Exactly.
All right. So which love quiz would you like to take? What percentage marriage material are you, or why am I still single?
Let's go for the marriage material. I'm very curious about this.
Great. So do you, I like to take it as specific characters. You have a particular character that you would like to pretend to be.
I think it has to be Rinko.
All right. So we will take it as Rinko. So if you can open it too, because sometimes if we disagree on an answer, we can put different answers and then maybe we'll get a different response. Yeah.
Okay. So, yep, I've got it.
All right, so I will read all the flavor text and everything. So this is a BuzzFeed quiz that is, what percentage marriage material are you, with the subheading, are you built for commitment? And the first question is, do you always apologize when you're in the wrong? Answers, I would if I was ever in the wrong. Yes, but it might take me a while to realize I've done something wrong or to swallow my pride. Or, yes, I always apologize if I think I've hurt someone.
I think it has to be yes, but it might take me a while. Yes. I think Linko's pretty stubborn, but she's not inhuman. She's not cold.
That's true. I agree with this. Next question. Which of these things do you do for your partner? Tick all that apply. All right. All the things we can tick are make a conscious effort to compliment them regularly. Say thank you whenever they do anything for me. Try to be enthusiastic about things that aren't necessarily interesting to me, but are important for them. Tell them you love them regularly. Make an effort to concentrate on only them when they're talking.
Ooh, okay, so we have to tick, try to be enthusiastic about things that aren't necessarily interesting to me, but are important for them, don't we? We have to
She
pick
definitely
that
tries
one.
That.
She does try that. So that's one.
I think the last one is applicable. Make an effort to concentrate on only them when they're talking.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And maybe say thank you whenever they do anything for me. I think she does thank you when he sets up the North Izu tourism thing for her. I know that's kind of orchestrated by Kaori, but it's not like it's alien to her. And she does when she's dating movie guy, Okada, like she does kind of thank him for cooking and stuff like that. And she does seem really appreciative. So I think that would work. I don't see her complimenting regularly just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And tell love them regularly. I think that's probably too direct.
All right, I agree. So which of these would be a deal breaker?
Yeah.
My partner is unambitious. My partner doesn't have any of the same interests as me. My friends and family don't like them.
My friends and family don't like them.
Really? That's what you... I was going to pick the middle one. Same interests.
Oh, well, we can take different things. I think if Kaori and Koyuki didn't like a guy that Ninko was dating, I think it would be a deal breaker. I don't think she could have a relationship at the expense of her friendships.
I feel like both of them apply. That's the issue.
Okay, let's go down from different routes.
Yeah, we're doing different things now. So
we don't like them.
Are you very specific with how your home is organized and decorated? No, I don't really care. I'm fine with whatever, as long as it's clean. Yes, it stresses me out otherwise.
This is a tough one. I kind of think she doesn't really care, but that's because she has mommy cleaning up after her. So
I feel like there are points where she's like, oh, I really like that everything is clean in your apartment, Mr. Hayasaka, yeah, and stuff like that.
Well, she says that about Okada as well. She's like, he cooks and he cleans, and yeah. So I think I'm fine with whatever as long as it's clean is probably the closest.
That's what I'm picking. All right. Your partner is annoying you. What do you say to get them to stop? What you're doing is very distracting. Could you do it elsewhere? Could you please stop that? I would just move somewhere else where they can't irritate me.
I think she'd just move somewhere else.
Probably. She's the type of person who like keeps things inside until they bottle up and spill over, which I relate to very much.
Oh boy. Yeah, I think she'd just move.
All right. How comfortable are you talking about finances with your partner? I'm comfortable telling them about how much I earn and if they have any significant debt, but they don't need to know everything. Yes, I'm completely open about all matters financial because it affects them too. I'm fine if it's brought up, but I don't know how comfortable I'd be bringing it up. I hate talking about finances. This is toughy.
This is really tough because on the one hand, she does talk about money a lot. Yeah. Like, so he spends half the time telling us how much, like, you know, I spent 30,000 yen on this dress. I spent 28,000 yen on this taxi journey. And she's really kind of comfortable talking about that. And that's from really early on when she says that her nails that Kaori does for her cost like 30,000 yen or something.
I know. I was like, I would never spend that.
I know. I was kind of working it out into sterling in my head and going, oh, no. And then when she makes that comment later about it, 30-something's woman's weapon is her bank account. I was like, I wish that's the way it worked. But so I think she is kind of comfortable talking about money, but I don't know if she'd be comfortable talking about debt necessarily.
Yeah, like I feel like she's like, I'll talk about money in the immediate, but I don't want to talk about planning it.
I don't even know. I'm leaning towards the idea that she says, yes, I'm completely open about all matters financial because it affects them too. I don't know that she'd have hang-ups talking about it.
That's fair. All right, next question. How would you describe your friendship groups? Oh boy. Close-knit. Varied. I have lots of different friends. I have just one or two close friends. My partner is the only person I need. Definitely not that one.
Close-knit?
Yeah, I think close-knit is closest because she has more than two friends. Like,
yes, she does.
So, that's fine. All right. Do you think partners should keep secrets from one another?
Oh.
Oh, boy. No, you need to be able to trust them with anything. Ideally, no, but it would be naive to think that you could tell them everything. Sometimes it's better to keep things from them for the sake of the relationship. I'm entitled to my privacy and they to theirs.
This is really hard.
I'm torn between ideally no, and sometimes it's better to keep things from them.
It seems almost like during the series, she thinks it's better to keep things from them for the sake of the relationship, but ends up in a place where she says, ideally no, but it'd be naive to think that you could tell them everything.
Yeah.
I think she kind of accepts that there are some things that people don't want to talk about necessarily, but at the same time, that's not what she actually wants.
Yes. So. Ideally no, I'm okay with that.
Okay, let's go with ideally no.
I'm going to click that. All right. Would you be disappointed if you didn't have your dream wedding? Yes, of course, that's half the fun of marriage. Maybe, but I would never get over it.
But I would get over it.
That's different. No, if anything, it would be a relief. I don't want a wedding at all.
I think it would be maybe, but I'd get over it.
Yeah.
I think she's gone past, because they make the, you know, they talk about weddings at that one point where she's like the marriage rushes. So it's the initial marriage rush right after college, where the people marry their high school sweethearts or their college boyfriends. And then there's the one just before turning 30, where they're kind of, the women are locking things down with people they've been dating, and they can see 30 on the horizon. And then there's the third wedding rush, where people see 35 on the horizon and are rushing into just any kind of marriage. And that she says, you know, we used to get really excited and dress up lots, and then we kind of toned it down a bit, and these days we try to avoid going at all. So it seems like she's almost kind of cynical about it at this point.
That's true.
Which I really relate to.
But she still wants to have a good wedding.
I think so, but if she couldn't have her dream wedding, I think she would get over it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think she'd accept it. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. But all right, now we should decide who should do most of the chores. It should be equal. Whoever has more time, whoever has the less stressful job. This is a real point of contention in relationships. Damn, all right.
Rinka's kind of selfish, and I think she'd probably say whoever has the less stressful job. Because, like, Mommy cleans up after her, and then when she's, like, she kind of seems like she likes to be waited on. So, you know, Daily Movie Guy was great because he was a bartender, and then at home he'd cook, and he'd clean, and he'd look after her. And I think she kind of liked that. I think she's quite self-indulgent. So I think she'd go for whoever has the less stressful job.
That's true. Those actions do speak to that. I guess the one hang up is words that she said to Mr. Hayasaka, where she was like, you can cook and I'll do the laundry and like I'll do this to your shirts and make sure that they're all like great. But you know, she didn't actually do those things, so we can't trust
exactly.
Words.
I think she is a romance screenwriter, and I think there is a part of her that, like, we see this throughout, where she romanticizes the idea of relationships. They all do it, actually, which is another thing that I love. They all romanticize the relationships they want to be in. And Kaori looks back at her boyfriend with, like, rose-tinted eyes. And then she spends time with him, and she's like, oh, that's right, you never listen to me. That's so annoying. And Rinko does exactly the same. When she kind of berates herself for not taking a chance on Hayasaka. But actually, the things that she didn't like about him, it wasn't entirely, you know, he doesn't have a lot of money and he doesn't have a lot of style. Like, a thing that she was kind of frustrated by was like him being overwhelmed by the city and like not feeling comfortable there and stuff like that. And it's like, no, those are kind of legitimate things to feel like you don't connect with someone on. So I think she kind of dresses this stuff up and is like, you know, well, if I were in a perfect relationship, obviously it would be perfectly equal. I don't think that's the way it would actually go.
Yeah. She's being real about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, next question. Do you ever actually ever want to get married? Well, No, I think marriage itself is unnecessary, but I would like to have a lifelong partner with that level of commitment. No.
So we can just ignore that right now.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I wouldn't want to be tied to just one person. Yes, I think my life would be empty without it. Yes, but only if I met the right person. Otherwise, I'd remain unmarried. Ooh.
So it's definitely a yes, because she kind of states repeatedly that she wants to get married. That's something. So does she think her life would be empty, or does she only want to get married to the right person?
Yeah. Would she be okay not being married if she never met the right person? I don't know. I don't think that she thinks her life would be empty, because like she does like her job. So like her life wouldn't be empty, right?
That's true. And she does really value her professional life.
Yeah.
There's a great moment where she's like, it's okay if you screw up in love, but if you screw up your job, that's a problem.
That's where you're really wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, okay. So let's go with yes, but only if I met the right person.
Okay. Results.
Okay. What percentage are you?
I'm 73% marriage material.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. You might not even be in a relationship, but whoever you end up with will have hit the jackpot. Aw, that's right, Rinko. I agree. You're exactly.
She's such a good character.
73% marriageable.
That's probably a fair assessment of Rinko, actually. I think that's fair.
I know, right? I think that's legitimately fair. All right, so now shipping corner, what we're all really okay. here for. So I guess we should save Rinko's relationships until the end, since she's, you know, the main character or whatever. So how do we feel about Kaori and Ryo?
Conflicted. Like, I love that they're so comfortable together, but he doesn't treat her very well. And I don't think she's quite as into him as she wants to be. So yeah, conflicted.
I think I was very surprised, actually, that, like, after Ki told her to run away because she was the third woman or whatever, that, like, he never came up again. I was genuinely shocked. I was like, wow, he didn't, like, chase after it at all. And I think that was disappointing to me because I guess it proves that he, like, really wasn't into her. But I was like, oh, man, I really thought he was. Like, I really thought if she just openly ever asked him, you know, why do you keep dating this model? Like, we should just be the main couple, that, like, he'd be like, oh, maybe I'd consider that. But no.
And so that's, she never does. She never, she doesn't. She says kind of repeatedly, like, oh, I can't ask him that. I can't ask him why he's with this woman who only eats salad, who he doesn't actually enjoy spending time with. I can't ask him.
I was like, no, but you can, though. At least once.
But she likes having even the illusion of a relationship that's meaningful. And it is a meaningful relationship in a way, because it's somebody that she does have a history with and a bond with and that kind of thing. But, oh, it's just... And he's really likable. And I think Higashimura does that really well, because I love it when he's on the page. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really charismatic character, and I completely understand Kaori feeling drawn to him. But... yeah, it's not good for her. She was right to run away.
He's also just, like, kind of cute looking. Like, I'm like, yeah, I like you. You're fine. You're good to look at. Like, you're a musician. I guess that makes sense. But he's a model, and I'm kind of like, I don't like you or how you look, but all right. Like, personal tastes.
Exactly. Ooh. Yeah, Ryo comes across really well. And Kaori is really, you know, we kind of see... I mean, I really like them because they're an odd couple, and I really like odd couples. Mm. So as you probably guess, when I say I like Nodeme Cantabile and I like Kimura Petto, and like, it's all about these couples who seem kind of mismatched, and Kaori's like she's this kind of gorgeous nail salon, like, nail artist, and she like is with this really scruffy musician, and like when they probably were first together, maybe their friends were like, what are you doing? And I just thought that was really cute. Yeah, and I thought their relationship was really cute, but it's less cute when he's with other women and kind of treating her badly. And but at the same time, she consents to all of this. She knows exactly what's going on, and I kind of don't want to take that away from her. She knows the deal, but she does over time expect it to turn into something else, and Ki knows it never will. And Yo knows it never will, and it's just kind of getting her to see that, I think.
Yeah. But. I always just was so disappointed that I'm like, you have perfect opportunities to just say it to him once, and then this could, you would know so definitively.
But I think that's a really, I kind of love, this is sort of what I meant earlier when I said that it shows you kind of really raw, ugly sides of this situation, is I love that there's no conclusion there. There's no kind of clear resolution, because actually sometimes things just do happen. You get ghosted or you ghost somebody else, and you just never know what happens to them, and that happens. That's especially true. Now so I love that there were some relationships where that just happened.
All right, so then how do we feel about Koyuki and Mr. Marui?
Oh, I had issues with him from the moment he first showed up on the screen, because he's Koyuki's type, but he's, like, not my type at all. So, when she's describing, like, oh, it's so cute, so how he does this and that. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's extremely off-putting.
You're like, he's old. Why is he saying that? In a cutesy way,
like,
or
there
whatever.
Were some things he did that were really nice, but it was – I've got friends who, you know, have dated people like this, where they're really perfectly inoffensive. But they're, like, I don't even know how to explain it, but they're exactly like Mr. Marui, where he's just, like, perfectly inoffensive, but comes across to me as bland. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I don't understand what Koyuki finds so great about him at all. And I'm like, Koyuki, you're kind of kick-ass. What are you doing? But he's her type, so.
I feel like we're supposed to think he's bland, but that just Koyuki likes that blandness. In a way.
But that's so strange to me. Like, I kind of would have expected someone like him to be the example of settling, but instead that's Hayasaka, who he's not bland exactly. He's more generic. Yeah. I think subtle difference. Like he's kind of the archetype of the sort of polished professional romantic. Whereas Mr. Marui, I feel like there's nothing standout about him. If I had to describe him as a character, I don't think I could.
I would. The only ways I would describe him are like a little bit needy and like trying to be cute, but like maybe not cute if that's not your deal.
He's being cute, I guess, and I just don't really like cute in people.
There you go.
I don't know. Probably that's it. I mean, I don't like Ki as a character, but a softened version of Ki, where he's just so direct. And I made this comment in a tweet a few days ago, actually, but I really love it when someone can make fun of me to my face in a way that makes me laugh. Mm. And that kind of walking that line between offending someone and being just hilarious, mm-hmm. being able to walk the right side of that line is something I really, really value. And Maru is the kind of guy who will never go near that line.
No, yeah.
And
no.
So just not interested at all.
All right. Fair. We've discussed, okay, well, no, that would be a Rinko relationship. All right. So Mammy and Mr. Hayasaka.
I kind of loved this
for
the length of time that it lasted. I have to say, yeah, I really did. And like, I thought that the things that he was drawn to about her, and again, she's kind of a foil for Rinko, so it makes sense. He's attracted to Rinko later on, and he's attracted to Rinko when she was younger. He sees the same qualities in Mammy. You know, he's got a type. I can get behind that. And he's not like put off by her appearance or anything. And he doesn't tell her to change the way she looks or anything like that. And he's just really appreciates her. However, she absolutely does the right thing breaking up with him. She's 19. Good call.
Yeah, good call.
Good call. So yeah, I think it's kind of, yeah, I don't really understand what a 30-something man would see in a 19-year-old girl. And same for vice versa. I'm 34. I'm not going to be dating a 19-year-old anytime soon. But like that aside, if you can kind of overlook that, I thought that they were really cute while they lasted.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, yeah, they seem to like mutually respect each other. They work in similar lines of work, so they should technically be bolstering each other in that. That's good. I like it. Power couple.
And they could be. And Rinko foresees that future a few times where she's like, oh, they're going to be this power couple and I'm going to be like shafted from the entire industry. Like, she's not wrong, though. If that were the path that Mammy wanted to go down, she totally could. And what's great is that it's done in such a way that it's not like she's sleeping her way to the top or anything, which is another situation that Rinko sees in her job. It's not like that at all. He just really likes Mammy. And she's like, oh, I might as well give it a go, because that's the way she approaches life in general.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, why not? This opportunity's come my way. Let's see what happens. Embrace it wholeheartedly and let's just see. So yeah, I really liked it.
All right. So now we'll go on to Rinko's tons of relationships. It's not that many. But we've already talked about Movie Guy. But, you know, I think generally we're like, that seemed pretty okay, except that maybe his creepiness was taken a little too far in this one instance. But otherwise, like, respect Rinko's decision. But also, like, he's probably, you know, he just needs to find a girl that is equally into movies as he is. And then, like, they're golden. Great.
I thought that was a really good thing about it, though, is that they're both, he makes the comment that they're both at this age, you know, they're both in their 30s. And he's like, it's really hard to meet people who have similar interests at this age. And it's like, yeah, he's choosing not to compromise. He is looking for somebody to fit a very specific niche in his life. He knows what their life together is going to look like. And that's what he wants. And Linko's not that person. And that's fine. So I thought it was completely, again, completely relatable. That's sometimes just how these things go.
Yeah. I think I was always a little weirded out that nobody was ever in his bar. I was like, this doesn't seem... How do you
he
make
does
any
think he
money?
Pay the bills.
Yeah, I'm like, you have to have some customers. Well. Yeah, I was like, I don't know about this, bro. That's cool. If you say you make money off this, like, good for you.
Yeah,
I'm not shown it though.
No.
Then we have Rinko and Mr. Hayasaka. I still think that they would have been good. Like, I would have been cool with that.
Yeah, it is win-win. Like, this is the one that hurt my heart.
Yeah.
I think. Because it is a perfectly good relationship, and she can see exactly where it's headed, and she's fine with that outcome. She's happy with that outcome. If Ki were not on the scene, she would be with Hayasaka, and she would have a perfectly good life. It is that there are no kind of blaring warning signs like there were with Movie Guy. And her gut instinct tells her to choose someone else, but like, if she could have overridden that and decided, no, it's not worth it, this is the future that I want, and that would have been fine too. So it was, she set it up, so Higashimura set it up so well, I think, that Rinko has these two choices, and they are so different, and there isn't one that's kind of superior to the other, really.
Yeah. I really thought, I thought believably the whole time, I was like, I know that Ki has been set up to be the one, like, kind of the mysterious main character hero, yeah, who she'll probably end up with. But I was like, but I think, you know, it could end up with Mr. Hayasaka. Like, I believe the whole time that that was a legitimate possibility, which is really hard to do. Most triangles end up, like, you're like, no, one, yes, of them is clearly going to win. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I think it's handled really, really well. And yeah, I'm sad for Hayasaka. The only thing that I found a bit kind of hard to believe was how well he took it.
I know, right?
I think that would have been perhaps a good opportunity to make the point that actually men feel these pressures too. And for him to kind of perhaps feel a little bit like he doesn't have time to waste and kind of make that point there. Doesn't, not in a cruel way, but just, you know, perhaps he could have thought, you know, I thought this was going to be so easy, and, you know, it was an easy choice for him.
Yeah.
Almost. But at the same time, it's totally in his character to throw himself at somebody kind of ring first.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. start a relationship from the deep end. So, you know, maybe that's not like a result of him feeling pressure. Maybe that's just finally somebody accepted and was in the right life position to move on with him in that way. But yeah, I thought they could have worked together really well. They could have had a lovely future together. And I'm a bit sad for him that Kinko didn't choose that. But I get it.
I do hope he finds love someday. Poor Mr.
Oh, he definitely will.
Oh.
Definitely.
So then the main couple, Rinko and Ki. I don't like Ki enough for this. I almost feel like his sad story is kind of a cop out for like him being a jerk.
Yes, thank you. Exactly.
And I'm like, no, I don't want that.
It's like he goes so far in one direction. Like, he goes so far to being cruel, and it is cruel. And there are moments where I'm like, this is kind of abusive. It's not okay. And it's so far in that direction that I think maybe Higashimura thought he needed something that dramatic to pull him back to, so that you could root for him. But it didn't really work for me at all.
It didn't work for me. Like, finding out his backstory, I was like, I mean, this was hinted the whole time that he had a young wife who died. Yeah. And, like, I guess it's supposed to be even worse because they knew each other that long and he was so young and she wasn't. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't, that's just,
I also found that kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I'd marry some kid just because I wanted to get married. Like,
I know.
I find that bizarre.
It reminded me of a combination of, like, two things that I love but I don't necessarily want them to go together is, like, Nicholas Sparks' books. Like, that's kind of the premise of my favorite one, A Walk to Remember, where it's, like, her one wish is to get married, but she's going to die. And she genuinely falls in love with a person and they get married. Like, okay, fine. I bought that in that situation. But also, like, Grey's Anatomy-level drama where I'm like, what? What's going on here? Like, I don't understand.
That's such a good point. That is a situation straight out of Grey's Anatomy, isn't it?
It is! Yes! 100%!
But Grey's Anatomy knows exactly what it is, and it does feel out of place in Tokyo Tsurata the Girls.
Yeah, like, Grey's Anatomy is exactly a weird hospital drama where everything is, like, too much coincidence and, like, so many traumas have happened at this hospital at this point that you're like, that's totally unbelievable, but fine. Like, you're not pretending to be something else.
Within specific context, it's totally believable because that's what happened there. Yeah.
Tokyo Tarareva Girls, I'm like, what?
I wasn't keen on his backstory. And, like you say, the rest of it is so realistic and it's so kind of relatable. And then this backstory that isn't really plausible. Yeah. Like, I don't know, maybe there's an edge case or two where it has actually happened somewhere in the world. But, you know, reading it as a 30-something woman, I'm like, I would never get married to a teenager, which is, I don't remember how old he actually was then. But he'd known her since he was a child.
He was 18, I think.
Yeah, he'd known her since he was a child. Yeah. And then they got together as a couple when he was 18, right? So that's, I wouldn't marry an 18-year-old, even if I were about to die, but marriage does hold this kind of almost mythical place in Tokyo Tararuba Girls, where they're like, we have to get married at all costs. And so, you know, it fits in with that, I guess. But he's just awful to her.
Yeah.
And it's not enough to win me over for that.
Yeah. I feel like what was missing from the backstory, too, is just like, you know, we don't really get to see him fall in love with the doctor lady. It's just kind of like, we're told that, you know, he's been with her since he was 9 or whatever. She's been his doctor. And then we skip to 18 and he's like, I'm totally in love with you. And you're like, wait, what? How did that happen? Please explain to me. And then she dies and he's like apparently super devastated. And you're like, okay. Like, I would have accepted it more, I think, if it was more of a like him just being nice, like kind of both of them just being like, oh, yeah, we're just doing this to fulfill the wish. But also we kind of could maybe have had real feelings if, I don't know. It was weird.
I don't know. I don't know if that particular age gap plus life experience together plus power dynamic weirdness. I don't know if
there's
that
no way overcoming it
ever work for me. I don't know. I would have preferred some more realistic view, and like of Key as a character. So he's 25. He's this hardened cynic. I don't know. Like parental issues, maybe. Like if he's if he's just not seen relationships work, or he's got this really kind of embedded idea of how good relationships function, and he doesn't think, he says some things that are super judgmental of the way that Rinko lives her life. And I wasn't sure at first what that was rooted in. And I still don't think that the backstory that we get really explains that.
Yeah.
When he says, you know, a good woman doesn't go out drinking with her friends kind of thing. And it's like, where does that come from? I don't think that that's actually backed up well enough.
I mean, I guess it's supposed to be like, you're wasting time. You could die at 33. Like, I've seen it happen. And he's just like, thinks everybody's going to die. But at the same time, I'm like, that's a completely unrealistic
view. I don't think that's a strong enough point to make, to be honest. And like, it's just one example of Higashimura dropping the ball a bit. But I don't think that's the point of Tokyo Tararuba Girls. It's not actually the romance. The romance happens.
It's true.
The point is that the milt and the liver disappear. That's the main thing, is that she gets to a point where she's no longer asking what if, and she's no longer looking back and regretting. She's no longer looking forward and kind of hedging her bets. She's committing wholeheartedly to a conscious decision. That's the point. So who that, like what that decision was and who it's for, it's kind of almost irrelevant. But the fact is, Key is so unlikable that on a shipping side of things, I just can't.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't get behind that at all. Ooh. And I think it's just another example. Like, I don't think they're going to be a couple together forever. I think they're going to break up, and Rinko's going to find herself like 35 going, yeah, that might not have been the best idea.
She's going to go back to Hayasaki again, being like, no, for real this time.
Yeah.
We're going to do it.
Time, she's 43. Yeah. I mean, potentially, you know.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I think the other thing, I was like, I mean, I guess this was also inevitable, but the way that Rinko's like, I'm not the what if girl, like, you're the what if boy, and I'm like, all right, cool, like, I don't feel it, but sure. I guess you had to inevitably say that, but I don't feel it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't really apply, and he's not in the same situation. Like, the kind of, he's almost in the opposite situation. He's more of a, like, the fact that he's 25 and he's so sure that he knows exactly how things should be done and exactly how romance works and exactly what Rinko should be doing with her life, to the point that he's that judgmental about it. Like, that's kind of almost the opposite of what if.
I know.
I don't know how to express it, but it would have been nice if Rinko kind of pointed out to him, like, your way of doing things is equally flawed, because you will end up alone and unhappy because you're driving people away with this. And, you know, I know that's kind of, it's his defense mechanism, but for him to kind of realize that he can't act this way forever and it's not sustainable, it's gonna take a toll on him too. He hasn't really thought that through. So yeah, it would have been nice if there'd been kind of more of a counterpoint there than just you're a what if boy.
I know. Yeah. But you know, inevitability.
Of course, it has to be done.
I don't know if this really applies to this manga, but is there any ship you wish had been real? Like, Rinko should have ended up with, I can't even name another male character in this.
No, I think they've got this one covered pretty well. But I did kind of want Ryo to wake up and realize. And like Koyuki's guy as well. Like, I think it's good that they didn't end up together. Mm-hmm. But I do think it would have been nice if one of them had. So even though I think that it served the story best, I think the fact that it didn't go that way is a shame, like from a shipping perspective.
Yeah. I was kind of like, I feel like Ryo in the end will come back to her, right? Like that felt more realistic than Mr. Marui, like abandoning his wife and young children. Like
very young children.
Yeah, like that didn't seem like, I was like, that's probably not going to happen. That's definitely not in the cards.
It was absolutely right because, you know, they almost never leave their wives. it was right that he stays with them. But yeah, yo, it's like, it would perhaps have been a nice full circle story for him to realize what Kaori realizes when she's looking back and saying, you know, we only had this like palmen and cup ramen and like a terrible view of Tokyo Tower and we were really happy. But at the same time, she has totally rose tinted that and he treats her really badly. So I don't, there's kind of, it would have been nice if he'd kind of realized, but he's not shown to be a character with that level of self-awareness. So it's fine. Yeah.
So do we have an OTP here? I still think it's Rinko and Mr. Hayasaka. I would have appreciated that.
That's probably the closest, isn't it? But this just, like, for all I love the relationships in this, this isn't a shipping manga for me, weirdly enough. I absolutely love it. I absolutely love the relationships in it, but there's no one relationship that I read it for. I read it for the individual characters.
Yeah.
So I read it for Rinko. For her being with her friends. I read it for her relationship with Mami. It's actually all about the women in this one rather than the ships.
It's true.
Which is rare for me, actually. I think, most of the time when I read Jose, I just kind of get drawn to particular ships, but this is so special. It's so different.
Oh, all these special manga breaking my my outline. That's fine. I'll accept it.
Okay, sorry.
That's cool. So before I read the outro, do you have any final thoughts? I know you said this was like your favorite manga possibly of the decade, so that's pretty big.
It's huge, and I think that it's one that I wouldn't have appreciated until hitting this particular stage of life. I don't think I could have read this at Mami's age and appreciated it, but now I would say, as you've said to anyone who's kind of approaching 30s, in your 30s, I think this is well worth reading for absolutely anyone, and especially if you've read Princess Jellyfish and you liked that, because the humor is pretty much the same.
There you go. I'm very curious what a person who is Mammy's age would think of this manga, to be honest. Like, I want to know, like, what age do you appreciate this or whatever? Yeah, because I kind of feel like, you know, like late teens is when you kind of start thinking that you can read about adults and like relate to them and think they're cool, like cool stories or whatever.
That's true.
I don't know.
I think that specific sense of kind of looking back on opportunities that you had in your late teens, early 20s, and realizing that you won't get them again, I think that's something you need to have experienced to really fully immerse in this one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think I really truly understood that until my late 20s. I think I just assumed, I mean, for me, a really easy example is I was so sure I was going to move back to Japan. And it took me until my late 20s to kind of go, oh, well, even if I go back to Japan now, a lot of my friends there have got married and are starting to have babies. And it is not going to ever be the same as it would have been had I moved straight after graduation. And just realizing that that opportunity will never be available to me again, that hit me really hard, actually. And it's changed the way that I view things in my life now, and it's changed the way that I make decisions, for example. And yeah, I think if I hadn't had that experience of very specific regret and very specific kind of feeling like doors have closed forever, that I would have kind of been able to identify with these characters as strongly. So yeah, like you, I'd be really curious to see what a teenager thinks of it.
I don't know, right?
How much they get out of it, but yeah,
I'm like, would it serve as a warning to them? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of self-help things these days definitely veer on the like, door, there's no door that ever closes forever. And I'm like, I feel like there is, though. Like, I think you're just lying.
Yeah, but I think they cover that in the manga almost when, you know, Ninko imagines her 43-year-old self coming back to her.
Oh, yeah.
And saying, no, don't do it. take advantage of this opportunity with movie guy. And she's like, no, I'm still walking away because it's still not right. So even then, I think a teenager could read this and not take it as a warning. They'd be like, well, thank goodness that's never going to happen to me.
That's never going to happen to me. Exceptionalism. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that's how I would have taken it reading it at 19. I'd be like, phew, at least I'm not like that.
Oh, no. All right. Well, any 19-year-olds who read it, like, write me an email.
Let us know.
Send us some tweets or whatever.
Please do.
All right. So thanks for listening to Shoujo and Tell. Comments, questions, constructive criticism, concerns, need to gush about your OTP? Email shoujoandtell@gmail.com or leave a comment on shoujoandtell.com/tarareba girls. We're at shoujoandtell on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This is a newish podcast, so it'd be great if you could leave a review on iTunes. This will help the podcast reach more hearts, or at least ears. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next time for The Key to the Kingdom by Kyoko Shito. Spoilers, you just need a Keyblade and Kingdom Hearts is light, okay? Until then, bye!